Welcome to the Cello Sherpa podcast, where we explore all aspects of the climb to the summit from intermediate musician to the professional stage. Check us out online at thecelloSherpa.com or follow us on Instagram, TikTok, or YouTube at the Cello Sherpa. I'm Joel Dallow, your host. I joined the cello section of the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra in 1999 and founded the Riverside Chamber Players based in Roswell, Georgia in 2003. If you're looking for a bit of extra help on learning your orchestra or solo repertoire, perhaps we can help. Visit www.thecellosherpa.com and drop us a line. We offer virtual or in-person lessons. Today's episode is sponsored by Clear Resources, your premier resource for compliance, legal, ethics, and risk. For more information, visit them online at clearresources.com. Today's guest is performance coach Steve Toshchin. Steve has a lifetime of experience working in many roles as a health practitioner, a musician, an executive, and a coach, which has given him a unique insight into working in the highest pressurized environments. He is the founder of the Elevation Project, which helps individuals and organizations achieve high performance. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Cello Sherpa podcast.
Yeah, thank you, Joel. I'm looking forward to this. Thank you so much for the invite.
You're welcome. So what is the Elevation Project and what led you to starting this company?
I'll try to give you as brief a description as possible. I've had a really brilliant journey over time. And if you would have asked me when I graduated in 2002, I never would have predicted that I'd be where I am today, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I left school as a physical therapist, just really focused 100% on movement as therapy. My brain was wrapped around sports medicine. It was wrapped around serving in that capacity, very much in this realm of just physical wellness. And I was an athlete my whole life. I had an affinity for certain sports, and I just had the grace and the luck in certain circumstances of having the opportunity to work in sport for as long as I did. And that journey just kind of snowballed from one opportunity to the next. And it gave me the opportunity to work in the United States, in North America, to work in Europe, to work in club settings, and also to be able to compete in international competitions. And that over time just exposes you to the world of elite sport, which is, it's exhausting. It has a need to have the tolerance to high levels of pressure and stress constantly. Uh-huh. You have to navigate that while at the same time maintaining a standard of performance. And there was a point where I knew the gas tank was running low. My family has made incredible sacrifices over time to support me in pursuing something that uprooted us several times from one place to the next. And that's just the nature of the beast. But there was a point where I started thinking this needs to have a different connection to purpose than what I'm dealing with right now. And we started to evaluate that together as a family. And in the background of all this, Joel, is the fact that I left my true passion as a musician to take on a different passion that was really very much financially based. I was Southern California musician in LA and dealing with what that looked like in the mid to late 90s as it related to the music scene. You know, it wasn't rosy, not that it is now either, but it wasn't rosy then, and it was a difficult circumstance. And I made the choice. I made the choice to leave the profession full-time as a professional. I never stopped playing. I never stopped engaging in projects, but it just wasn't my full-time pursuit.
Yeah.
But that was always in the background through my entire 20-year career in elite sport. And I knew my heart was continuing to move me in a direction where whatever choice I made in this next phase of our life had to have the space for this creative endeavor, for this other passion that I wanted to commit my life back to. And that those two worlds collided sometimes gently, and sometimes it was a car crash. You know, I dropped out of school my freshman year because I wasn't ready to give that up yet.
Yeah.
So I went back to music and then back to school. So there was times when it was a difficult struggle to balance between the two. We got to COVID, and you know, there was this period where I felt what it would feel like to have time. And that's when I started the Bomb Shelter Beats studio within the home and created that within the house. And I had an opportunity now to engage in a really meaningful way once again. And that was interesting to me. And it started just to turn the flame up a little bit on something that I felt strongly about. And then as I got to this point where we transitioned into this consulting idea, the Elevation Project became that for me. It was my ability to take what I had learned in watching, coaching, and executing myself high performance principles in the most pressurized circumstances. And you learned a lot about the environments that are necessary to maintain that level of standard of performance. At the same time, the internal characteristics and personalities and consistent traits that high performers possess, you just start to eventually understand what it means. And then I felt like I was pretty good at helping people get there. I felt like I led teams well. I had great teachers along the way that showed me how to lead high-performing teams. And I started to really understand a connection to a passion for myself of serving people in that capacity. I've always felt like I had a desire for servitude. And in this particular case, it eventually became the vision statement of the company to serve those seeking high performance. So it came full circle to a point where I felt like I could take these skill sets that my experience gave me. I had a school of hard knocks and it did shape me, but I felt like it was my pathway to this new area of mastery where I feel like I've got a hold of something and I feel like I'm good at bringing people to that place with me. And that was the idea, whether it's individuals, whether it's musicians, whether it's athletes, whether it's coaches, whether it's executives, there is a common thread to what high performance looks like. And the Elevation Project was my opportunity to present some freedom in my world so that I could connect people and serve them in this capacity while at the same time, finally again, feel the freedom that came from being a musician again. It's been great.
Yeah. So let's back up here for a second. What's your instrument?
I'm a drummer.
A drummer. Okay.
I know just enough about everything else to be dangerous and write music, but not enough to perform live on any other instrument. But I can play bass as well live. But for the most part, as a songwriter, yeah, I play a few instruments. As a professional musician, I'm a drummer.
Okay. And can you just tell us briefly what the Bomb Shelter Beats is that you mentioned?
Yeah. So when we moved into our home, we moved here in 2015. I'm in Worthington, Ohio, a suburb of Columbus. And when we bought the house, we went into the basement and I'm looking at this space in the basement. It was an unfinished part of it. And I didn't know what this was. It was an empty area. It had a doorway, but it didn't have a door. And I walked through it and I'm looking. I said, what is this? My wife's an architect. So I said, Gani, come here and take a look at this. What am I standing in here? And she looked up and she connected. It's a mid-century home. And it's all concrete block, including the ceiling is, is concrete. And she said, Steve, this is a bomb shelter.
Nice.
I was like, no way. So at first in my head, I thought, you know, I'm just gonna put my drums in here. I built a riser because the sump pump is in there too. If it floods, I can't have it ruining my, my drums. So I had risers built, but not because I was going to make it a studio. I had risers built so I could keep my drums off the floor and everything. And it was just my rehearsal space. And then as I got to COVID, I was like, I love engineering. I absolutely love it. The production piece. I love the creative process going from concept to an actual, you know, artistic outcome. I love that. And I wanted to be able to do that. I wanted to record remotely for people, but I also wanted to be able to have a space where I could help singer-songwriters and things of that nature, which is still a project I'm still trying to get off the ground. But
yeah,
at that point, I thought, honey, I'm going to turn this into a studio. Now I started wrapping my head around sound treatment and sonic science and things like that. And we started to shape the thing out. And there, lo and behold, there you go. Now it's a space where I can record, but I rehearse in there too. I've got my own projects and my bandmates, you know, set up shop inside the bomb shelter. And then at times, you know, I obviously have people in there that need something different sonically. So we can move things around and allow those concrete blocks to influence the sound we get in there. Or we can close things off and dampen things, whatever it might be. But I'll have amplifiers in there cranked and just close the door and just let this huge, gigantic sound kind of influence the way we lay down tracks. But it just became a space where I could start down this path of probably something that's going to be my life when I retire from consulting.
Yeah.
So we started Bomb Shelter Beats. That's cool. The name of the company.
That's a great name. Makes sense when you explain it, especially the story behind it. So then let's talk about the Elevation Project. What are the characteristics that you would be looking for to help an organization achieve the highest performance of functioning?
Yeah. So the starting place, because I get asked this a lot, it is relevant. A lot of times I'm asked, what is your definition of high performance? You know, that's relevant here. My definition of high performance is not about outcomes. It's not about results. My definition of high performance, and I don't think I'm unique in this, is the relentless execution of your process. Uh-huh. That's high performance. And that's relevant in any environment.
Yeah.
And whether I'm stepping into this orchestral situation and what I'm really trying to evaluate is, I want to see how the leader implements the process. Is this all happening by chance? Uh-huh. Or is it all happening in a premeditated way? Because at the root of what you're trying to create, Joel, is consistency.
Yeah.
That's what you're really trying to create. High performance is about a standard. It's not about an outcome. I focus on my role and the standard that I execute that role.
Okay.
If I do that every day, everything's going to be fine. Now, I need to understand that within the context of how I affect other people. Don't get me wrong. At its foundation, it's whether I possess the relentless execution of my process. If I do that, more often than not, as Bill Walsh's book says, the score takes care of itself, right? That's very uh-huh. much the process in which we get to high performance. There needs to be foundational elements that lead you to consistency. And a lot of this kind of also bleeds into some of the questions that we saw in some of the emails that we exchanged back and forth about, you know, dealing with pressure.
Yeah.
In any situation, including situations of pressure, high performance is about making things as predictable as possible. When you remove the opportunity for something unpredictable, your stress levels will drop.
Yeah.
You know, when you move into these situations where things become more certain, you have the bandwidth to focus on your process. You have the bandwidth to then be in a position where, listen, if something does go off script, I'm okay. I can handle it. Because all these other things are nicely wrapped into this area of consistency and predictability because I took it upon myself to create the predictability, to remove any sort of uncertainty because my process, what I do daily, gives me this feeling of groundedness.
Yeah.
So that I can pursue areas of uncertainty with less catastrophic thoughts and anxiety. That's really at the root of it. Those are the things that I look for. A lot of times, if you go beyond that, the whole entire high performance process requires a certain profile of leadership. Uh-huh. That requires an individual to put their practical skill sets on the back burner. It doesn't matter if I'm still a great violinist, cellist, so on and so forth, if I'm leading the group.
Okay.
I'm now in a position where my leadership skills are more important. But a lot of the times what I get from executives is they're trying to balance the skills that are needed to be a leader and their desire to continue to be a practitioner because they can't let go of control.
Yeah.
I'm still so focused on, I've got to look over the spreadsheet. I've got to be the one that interacts with the client, uh-huh. closes the sale, so on and so forth. It's very difficult to find the headspace that's required to lead and manage the organizational needs, which are what behaviors and actions are acceptable based on the vision and mission and the values we've set for this organization. Managing expectations is extremely time consuming.
Yeah.
Managing behaviors and actions is very time consuming. So as I become a leader, one, I start to move into a space that becomes lonelier and lonelier and lonelier. But as I'm moving into those spaces, I need to understand that my view needs to also elevate. It's hard for me to see everything when my feet are on the stage and all I can see is the same view as the musicians. Uh-huh. I don't think it's a coincidence that when you're watching the LA Philharmonic, the conductor is up on a pedestal above. There's just a scope. I need to see, right? If I want to hear what's happening in the orchestra, I'll go back into the auditorium to listen to the fullness of it. I won't get closer. I'll get further away. And really, leadership is very much like that. You have to let go and move towards an area where you can see and get up into the stands, get away from field level and get up into the stands. And a lot of that is what I'm looking for when I move into a group and I'm trying to say, listen, what am I looking for to be able to say, hey, I see obstacles to high performance here. There's bits like that. Where's the process? Where's the process that's leading me to consistency? And if there isn't, is it because leadership isn't drawing the boundaries around what behaviors and actions are acceptable?
Yeah. And I also think there's an element of trust. So if you take the music director that's on the podium and leading, that person also needs to trust that the 90 musicians on stage are going to do what we're trained to do. And it's such a delicate balance between being able to push people to do better, but also to trust them to do their best. And finding that balance depends on the personalities of the group you're working in or the person that's standing on the podium and the combination of the two.
Yeah.
So it's fascinating to look at. Well, can you talk about what skills you use when you're performing as a musician that you would also apply to athletes you're coaching?
Yeah, we touched on it already. Like, you know, a lot of the things that you talked about were about the auditioning circumstances too. These are all super relevant. I've gone into auditions that are all sight reading based. You've got 15 minutes to really kind of prove the point. Mm-hmm. I've even gone on gigs where I was hired and my reading just wasn't good enough. And I got fired on the spot. Ooh. You know, it's happened to me before when I was younger in LA. It happened and it is what it is. But those moments, again, for me, in those circumstances, are about creating predictability. Uh-huh. You know, the one thing that I really admire is you musicians have an incredible ability for improvisation. This is an incredible skill set because they actually thrive on unpredictability. But if you think about why they do so well, it's because they are prepared for the unpredictability.
Yeah.
Most great improvisers are monsters when it comes to theory.
That's true.
You know, there isn't a lot that will surprise them as it relates to those circumstances. You talked about trust. You talked about safety. I always equate safety to trust. And those are the situations where, as a person stepping into an audition, you've got to create your own safety. You know, you have to create that on your own. Your preparation, your consistency in your process puts you into these circumstances, high pressure auditions, where, again, you've removed a lot of the uncertainty by being able to step into that circumstance and say, I'm prepared. I've given myself through my process the best opportunity to be as prepared as possible.
Yeah.
And at that point, you can let go of the result. This is the key.
Orchestra musicians are generally terrible improvisers. Mm. We're trained to see exactly what's on the page and play it at the highest level possible. Mm. So there is a different element of control that we have walking into an audition than when it comes to having to improvise something. Mm. We actually played a piece recently on stage where the conductor asked volunteers from the orchestra to improvise. And of about 85 players, she got one volunteer.
So, wow.
Just to give you a sense as to how we're trained. But anyway, I cut you off. Mm. So go ahead and say what you were going to say, the key.
Yeah. I mean, that for me, it's about being in a position to let go of the result.
Yeah.
More often than not, there's a great book called Performing Under Pressure. I believe it's Henry Weisinger wrote the book,
okay.
Performing Under Pressure. And when you're analyzing situations of pressure, you will increase the anxiety and pressure on yourself if you're constantly pursuing an outcome. Mm-hmm. Winning and losing is a good example, right?
Yeah.
If that's not really your priority anymore, then the freedom to just stay in automatic pilot is easier. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, you know, that's what we're dealing with. You know, orchestral music is about being really well prepared, seeing what's in front of you, reading it, and playing it at a high level, right?
Yeah.
And for those circumstances, the only thing that pulls you away is distractions that pull you away from automatic pilot. Ooh, I wonder if they like what I'm playing. Uh-huh. I wonder if they don't like what I'm playing. They're fidgeting. I can't see them. Oh, he leaned back in his chair. She leaned forward in her chair. And the only reason why I care about any of that is because I'm focused on the outcome.
Right.
If I'm not focused on the outcome, then none of their movements matter to me. Staying in automatic pilot is so crucial for performing under pressure. Because if the skill has made it to automatic pilot, which, you know, it doesn't start there.
Right.
Skill acquisition starts in a different area of the brain as we rehearse and we're driving towards this mastery of a skill. It doesn't start there. It moves there eventually. And the only thing that derails it is when we're distracted from automatic pilot. So how do you create the circumstances where the distractions don't matter? The starting place is by shifting your mindset to being very process-oriented, very laser-focused to your standard of your execution, of your role, and of your process. Because at that point, fun and winning is about whether you executed your standard, not about whether I pleased somebody else.
And it's subjective.
It is.
It's very subjective in music.
100%. Yes.
More so than when you have a sports team that the outcome is you want to win a game. But I see what you're saying is that you would be focusing on your skill set and doing that at the highest level. And if everybody does that together, then hopefully the outcome
you're gonna
is
win.
You win. Yeah.
Exactly. And here's the thing. We've won games where we played terrible.
Yeah.
So where does that fall on your spectrum? Was that a great performance? Did I high perform? No.
Right.
And I've also had games where we performed at an elite level and lost.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And there's other times where it is very similar. I got to work with Matt Fitzpatrick last year from the PGA Tour.
Okay.
And listen, there are a lot of similarities between sitting in that audition and having a very, very small limited window of time to win. And Matt leaning over a putt to win the US Open.
Yeah.
You're by yourself. Automatic pilot should just knock this thing into the back of the cup.
Yes.
Right? But when you're standing there and what will people think if I miss this?
That's
oh
right.
My gosh, it's right in front of me. My second point to this, as it relates to dealing with pressure, is a huge driver of anxiety is how we frame risk.
Okay.
When I'm in an audition, let's face it, there's risk. Just accepting the audition, there's risk. The risk of failure, for instance, right?
Yeah.
In those circumstances, I can frame risk a couple of different ways. I can frame it as what I have to lose, or I can frame it as what I have to gain.
Uh-huh.
If I'm going to break it down to super, super simple terms, right? And the beauty of risk is the mindset of always being focused on what I might have to gain. Because calculated risk, in my opinion, is the secret of success in life. I think you should take as much calculated risk in life as possible.
Yeah.
If you want to enjoy your life, be connected to true joy. Take calculated risk. And I think that's an aspect of pressure that doesn't get talked about a lot. Anxiety, for the most part, comes down to the results of how we interpret the risk we're about to take. If I interpret risk with all the things in my head that I have to lose, my anxiety is going to go up significantly.
True.
Right? So you combine a mindset of somebody who sits down and all they're thinking about is everything I might gain by this risk.
Yeah.
Combined with the freedom of autopilot, because I'm not distracted by a desired outcome to win or lose. You've got somebody that can deal with some serious anxiety and some serious pressure, right? Those are two really important ingredients.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I will say that one thing that the orchestra world has moved to in the last few years is completely screened rounds, even down to the finals.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the day, you can take out the distraction of seeing how anybody reacts, which really helps.
Brilliant.
But you have to get used to playing into a screen
mm-hmm.
that has its own limitations and feelings that I found I started to get comfortable with that.
Got it.
Because you knew how to set your expectation. And if you're sitting at home and you're practicing, you can visualize, I'm playing in front of a screen.
Mm.
It's easier than visualizing a group of people, but you can raise that level of what it feels like to be stressed. And the other thing is, it's easier to say when you already have a job, but if you go take an audition
mm-hmm.
and you know that you're putting everything out there that you can, you've put all that work in, like we were talking about, and they don't like what you have to offer, well, it's out of your hands anyway. If you did the best you could, then that's all you can do. And I think that
mm-hmm.
that's exactly what you're talking about, hitting the nail on the head with removing the pressure of the outcome.
Right.
That's a lot harder when you're getting out of school and you feel the need to pay your bills.
Yeah.
You have the need to pay your bills and you have to win a job to be able to do that. There's a different kind of pressure, but you still have to be able to, I think, adopt the mindset you're talking about. We had so much more to talk about that we split this episode into two parts, so be sure and catch part two of this interview, which will release in 1 week.
Thank you so much to Steve Toshchin for joining us today and sharing his story with us. And thank you for listening to another episode of the Cello Sherpa podcast. For more information on Steve and any of the links we spoke about today, check out our show notes by scrolling down on the episode. We're here to serve you. So if you have questions or topic suggestions you would like us to cover in future episodes, please use the contact page on our website, thecellosherpa.com. You will also find information about the specific services we offer on the website. Don't forget to follow us and rate us on whatever platform you get your podcasts. This helps us climb the rankings so other people can find us. Today's episode was edited by Eric Begay at Red House Productions and produced and recorded by me, Joel Dallow.